Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the team!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast offering tickets to the BCS Championship game. In the spirit of Coach Saban, and in response to listener feedback, we are efforting to podcast like champions, and believe today we have made nice strides in improving our sound quality. Give us your feedback on this and other topics on the web, Facebook, or through email. Tom, speaking of championships, the Tide's path took a turn from your line of sight. What contributed to this detour?
Too many things to start off with. I guess my first thing has to be the frustration with the offense. Ever since Jim McElwain has been here, he has known to scheme within the talent of the offense, and I know Greg McElroy does not like being referred to as a game manager, an a la Trent Dilfer, but that's what he is. And what works for this Alabama team is for him to complete or attempt 15, 20 passes and to have our horses carry the rock 40 times and force teams to do the exact opposite. And so I guess what was so frustrating today is probably the biggest thing that jumped out to me on the stat sheet was Greg McElroy had 12 rushing attempts. Our Heisman Trophy winner had 11. And so when your quarterback has more carries than your Heisman Trophy winner, that there's a problem there.
Tom, not all those carries were scripted. I mean, he was scrambling around. How much of that do you attribute truly to the play calling, to the line, or to McElroy?
Well, I think a lot of it is, well, I guess it's two things. Number one, obviously we don't know for sure the play calling, but I would assume that part of it was the play calling, and I would assume the other part of it was, you know, McElroy was just trying to do too much. I mean, he attempted 37 passes, okay? And so with those 12 carries, that still means that we had scripted 40 passing plays, and that's just too many passing plays from McElroy. And he said after the game that the linebackers were bumping his running backs that he could dump the ball off to. That's a bunch of shit. Because in watching the game, granted I wasn't there in person, I was watching it on TV, but there were numerous times that he could have dropped it off to them. They had no linebacker within 5 yards of them. And so they would have easily, with their talent, they only had to make one guy miss. Because, by the way, their base formation is a nickel. Okay, and you and I both know that one of their two linebackers is now probably gone for the year.
Right.
So you go into this ball game, and you've got a team that says, our strength is to run a 4-2-5, kind of like we did last year because our strength was, you know, DBs. And so here we are, a rushing attack team. We talk about how we're going to get up there with two or three tight ends. And remember, our guys are going to beat your guys. Well, if we had gotten in more in two and three tight end formation today and just lined up and knocked them off the ball, I'm sorry. That pass rush would have slowed down because their ass would have been tired. And I think that we played into their hand with a team who is in a nickel formation, and we're going to pass the ball 40 times.
Yeah, I think what aggravated me in watching the game is they out-ussed us. They were more multiple and diverse on offense. They were more aggressive on offense. They were more effective running the ball. They were more aggressive on defense. They affected the quarterback, whereas we could not. They imposed their will. They converted on key third downs. They made the big play. Tom, all the credentials that we aspire to, they executed yesterday, and it was frustrating watching almost a mirror image of what we think we are presented back to us.
Yes, and It was just very uncharacteristic of this team and McElroy. Even though he looked calm and collected, he didn't seem himself. And what was so frustrating is that this team just tried to not let the game come to them. They just tried to rush. It was almost like they felt, look, we're not going to be able to stop them. And so we're going to be in a shooting match here. You know, this is going to be whoever has the ball last wins the game. It was almost like, you know, you and I have talked about just take the air out of the ball and slow the game down. And you've got two of the best running backs in the country, and they only carried the ball 17 times between the two of them.
Yeah, it was a little bit aggravating. And with all the scrambling that McElroy was doing, it would have been nice to see the coaches help him out. I like the statement that Saban says that if you take what the defense gives you, eventually they'll give you the game. And we didn't play that style of offense. I would have expected shorter developing routes, maybe some screen plays. Let's work the tight ends. Let's pound the ball. Let's take advantage of their star linebacker being out and them being depleted in that area. I would not have been disappointed to see us play Beebs ball, where we know we're going to line up and run the ball and run the ball and run the ball. And we know we're going to have some three and outs early, but we also know that we're bloody in your nose and we're pounding you into submission. And we're going to win this darn thing in the second half. Didn't see that yesterday.
No, and take Florida last week for an example. Okay, and we'll talk about this later, but maybe the score differential in Florida was one of the worst things that could happen to still a very young team. Florida comes into that game with their big formation because they know we're going to run the ball, and they don't think they can stop us. And so they have five down linemen and three linebackers, and we still was able to do what we wanted to. South Carolina comes into this game with unproven talent, and oh, by the way, we know that you rushed Mark Ingram for 250 yards last year, but we are still starting the game in a nickel. It's like they were begging us to run the ball. And even if you look at the stats, he only threw the ball to Ingram and Richardson, I think, three times total. Okay, right. So to add to your screen thing for a second, man, just dump the ball in the flats. They've only got to make one guy miss, and they're going to have a 10-yard gain.
No, I agree. I think we're of the same mind in terms of our offensive play. What did you see on defense?
On defense, when you were talking about take what the defense gives us, that's what South Carolina did. You know, we are supposed to be a 3-4, and I know you and I have talked about that it looks like the nickel is our base. Well, it looks like the nickel is our base. But I have to tell, you know, the few of you that are listening out there that I was thoroughly wrong when I said Dante Hightower was as good as Rolando McClain. Maybe he was before his injury last year, but now he is not. Because last year when we ran that 4-2-5 for a second, we had Rolando McClain that was sideline to sideline. And what I noticed last night, which was so frustrating, is that they spreaded us out, and then they just ran the ball between the tackles or right on the edges. And because, you know, we had four guys down on the line of scrimmage, and we had our two linebackers. And one of them was Dante Hightower, who had to be the slowest guy on the defense last night by far. And when we got in our base formation and they spread out the DBs, they'd put all the wide receivers to one side, and then they ran to the other side. And all they had to do was block C.J. Mosley, because he was hustling, but he's a freshman, and he's still going to miss his gap sometimes, and he's going to make bad plays. But all they had to do was get one guy on C.J. Mosley, and it was a 15-yard game.
Yeah, I think you're right. They seemed to almost basketball. They were playing isolation. They'd move everyone away from who they were really going to. We would slant our defense over in that direction, and they would get the isolations, the one-on-ones that they really wanted. What aggravated me, and I know you'll probably want to speak to this too, it's certainly a key point that you've brought up throughout the season, and I hate to say that you're right, and that's us getting off the field on third down. We just couldn't do it. They converted a number of third and longs. All of their touchdowns came on long drives, third and tens, and they were just converting them. They had an 8-minute drive with quite a number of third down conversions. I remember on one of the touchdown plays, Barron had Garcia dead to rights in the backfield on a third down. Would have been a turn the ball over situation. Barron missed him. Garcia made the first down on the very next play, threw to Jeffries in the end zone for a touchdown. If we could have converted, and it's, you know, if and nuts, you know, candy and butts or whatever the saying is, if we could have converted just a couple of third downs, it would have been critical in the outcome of the game. Not necessarily we would have won, but gosh, it wouldn't have been a 14-point loss.
I think the biggest thing that we noticed in this game was that this was the first true balanced team that we have faced. Yes, I've been harping all year on getting off the field, and I've talked about how in the Florida game they had this many long drives, and in the Arkansas game, this many long drives. Well, last night, for the first time, you have a veteran quarterback who can run the ball, which Mallett could not. You have a running game, which Arkansas did not have. And you had as good of wide receivers as Arkansas, but oh, by the way, they're 6'5". And when you run a 7-yard slant, our little freshman, or excuse me, redshirt freshman and true freshman corners, they don't know how to play that right now. I was sitting there in the game saying, oh gosh, where is Kareem Jackson, who left as a junior, and where is Javi? Obviously, he graduated. But it was like those guys had been there long enough that they knew how to get the stops. And Steven Garcia was 17 of 20. How in the you-know-what do you let a quarterback complete 17 out of 20 passes?
Yeah, we just didn't expect Steven Garcia to do that. I don't want to say we came in just expecting we'd show up and win walking off the bus, but we just didn't seem to come out ready to play, and then we were down. And there seemed to be, unlike the Arkansas game, there seemed to be some looks of defeatism on the sideline because they were, the way that they were coming at us was so multiple that, you know, we can beat one dimension, we can beat not two dimensions playing in sync, and that's certainly what South Carolina brought.
Well, but just like the Arkansas game, though, you know, what was the biggest thing when we were watching the Arkansas telecast? And when that tide turned in that game, it was, we finally pinned our ears back and we got to Mallett and we knocked him down. And what was so frustrating, and I'll go back to Dante again in a minute, is because we were not getting pressure from our four, okay, we were playing a nickel and we were like protecting our DBs. Well, guess what? They were still completing 20 and 30 yard passes down the field. So if you can't guard their Austin Jeffries of the world, then just send 6 or 7 guys and just say, guess what? This is jailhouse. We're just going after you, and we're going to lay a lick on you even if you complete it, because you're completing the damn balls anyway.
You're completing them anyways.
We're going to try to knock your ass down.
Right.
And that's what really drove me crazy, is we just played into their hand, and we made no adjustments in the game, it didn't seem like. It seemed like, guess what? This is what we're doing. And this is what we're going to keep doing.
Yeah, we didn't seem to adjust as well as we would like. I was almost, you know, rooting for halftime to come with the thought that we would come out of half with some adjustments. And in fact, we did come into the third quarter and play a little bit. And it seemed at points in the second half that we would turn the game around and then take it. And then there was just the play that I don't know what to call it other than just probably my most angst-riddled moment of the ball game is when we attempted that fake field goal. It was a bad play call. We needed two scores at that point in the ball game. It was a 7-point game, and so we needed two scores to win, and we had an opportunity to get one of the scores right then. So why do you not take that? Why do you not take that opportunity to score? Kick the field goal there, then you know that the touchdown wins the game for you. You know, an argument there is it would have been a 42-yard kick. It would have been a career long for the kicker. But you know what? Know your personnel and play to your personnel.
If or he give Cade Foster, give the freshman a chance.
You see them practice every day. I guarantee you, South Carolina knew what his longest kick was, and when we line up for what would be a career long, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, hey, they may try something here because we don't know if we haven't seen this guy kick it that long. But you're the coaching staff. You've seen him kick in practice. You know if he can do it or not. And hell, if you know that he can't do it, then punt the ball or send your offense back out and make a play. So the fake field goal was definitely a bad play call. It was also a bad play design. Why do you throw to a defensive end in that position?
That was going to be my next point.
He's got his fingers taped up, his hands all taped up. He's a defensive end. He's a mauler.
And he's a redshirt freshman.
He's not a pass catcher. He's out there trying to catch the ball with boxing gloves on. And the poor guy had it in his hands but couldn't bring it in because he's got the Wilsons on and he's not going to make the catch.
But he's also a redshirt freshman who quite frankly, didn't even start this year until Upshaw got hurt. So my point is, he's not a game-proven guy, and so you've got a young one in the moment. and this is not what he does.
That's fair. I'm less mad at that than he's just the wrong person in the wrong place for that. And then it was just horrible play execution. We needed 11 yards at that point.
And throw it four.
Why do you throw it four? That fake field goal was just crystallized at that moment. When that happened, it started to sink in that this game might be lost.
Do you think that for all of the bad play calls and adjustments earlier in the game, do you think that Saban said a field goal is not enough here? I need to try to keep this ball and score a touchdown, because he didn't think he was going to be able to stop him?
That could very well be it, but my counterpoint to that would be, you make it a touchdown game, you make it less than a touchdown game, and the defense feeds off that. You drive after getting that interception, move the ball down the field, you kick the field goal, you get points from that. You reward the defense with points. You make it a four-point ball game, and the defense feeds off that. And, you don't know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. But I'll take a four-point game over a seven-point game and a demoralized team after a bad fake field goal and not cashing in on the interception. I'll take the four-point margin and let South Carolina have the ball back.
Well, I think it's even bigger than that particular play. And I think it was all the plays that led up to it. And, for those people that wasn't able to watch the game or might have missed this key series, yes, you had gotten the interception, okay? And so to touch on the interception for a quick second, we lucked into the interception because it was a great play call. Let's throw a jump ball to 6'5" guy. And the only reason we picked off the ball is because Will Lowry, okay, one of the few times we were in a dime the whole game, he actually gave help. And so just to venture off subject for a quick second, how many times are we going to let them throw the stupid screen pass before we put a guy on the inside there to kind of take that away? Okay, so we luck up and get a pick. We actually have the momentum. We might actually be able to turn this around. So our first play call, I'm expecting a run. What do? We throw a stupid quick pass to Julio in the flats because for whatever reason, we don't think we can throw the ball down the field to Julio. We have to throw it to him behind the line of scrimmage, which I don't understand. But he's able, with his pure athleticism, to get a first down. We give the ball to Mark Ingram on the next play. He gets 5 yards very easily. So now we have second and five at the 19. We're at the 19-yard line. And so what do we call? We try to call another quick pass to Julio on the right side. It's a bad snap. McElroy's timing's off. And so what does McElroy do on that play? He's got Ingram. Ingram shifts out into the middle of the defense. Linebacker is not even in the picture. Ingram could have picked it up if he would have just dumped it off. Does he dump it off? No. He thinks he's going to run around the left end and outrun two guys. Takes a hard hit. Now we got third and 10. Third and 10. And so right there, as I talked about earlier, one of the numerous times that he tried to do too much. And what's so frustrating is, and they said it best in the telecast, and I'm not going to be too hard on him because the guy has made 300 right decisions. But it was like Jim McElwain, you put too much on his plate last night. Because he is a good guy, and you this is his role, and you've defined it, and they all have their roles. And you put him in a situation there, so what does he do? He takes a sack. So to go back to your fake field goal for a second, no, man, you're at the 19-yard line. It's a chip shot.
Right.
You turn it into a 42-yard freaking field goal because of those other two stupid plays. If you had just kept carrying the rock there, you score a touchdown running the ball.
And that's exactly right. Know your personnel was my point. Maybe you just pound the ball in, and you do recognize we need two scores here. We're going to protect the ball. We're going to run it.
Eat some clock.
And we're comfortable with the field goal now. We're willing to accept the field goal now. And for whatever reason,
I will make one more point because I do think this was the key to the game. If you carry the rock there and you do what you do best and you come in two, three tight ends and you run the ball and you score a touchdown, you make it a tie game right there, and maybe South Carolina, they blink. Not only would it have given your team momentum with a field goal, but if you score a touchdown right there.
No, I agree. If we continue to run the ball a touchdown, I'm talking the merits of the field goal in that situation. If you score a touchdown, obviously that is that much better. You do take the crowd out of the game. You tie the game up. Everyone is already in the back of their minds. You know, every big play Alabama makes, there's a little bit of clinch going on. And if we had tied the game at that point, I think everyone's rear would have clinched up, and Alabama potentially could have come out with a win at that point. Tom, that's not where we are. We're down a game now with this outcome, and it was a 14-point margin. What was your takeaway from yesterday's game?
You know, I think Coach Saban said it best. Not only were we outplayed, but we were outcoached. And I think, you know, not to speak too much to the merits of the bye week, but I think the wily old veterans and Steve Spurrier and Ellis Johnson, they got the best of Kirby Smart and Jim McElwain. They out-coached them. They out-coached them from the start of the game to the end of the game in every facet. And then, not only in the schemes that they called, but in the personnel. And so, we had guys out there at the end of the game. We had a Dante Hightower. I don't know if he hurt his knee again in the middle of the game. I tried to go back and find what it was. But, man, he wasn't moving. He was just standing right there and letting the linemen come to him. And Courtney Upshaw came back at the end of the game, and the guy couldn't even walk. And so, not only were we being out-schemed, but we got horses on the sideline that at least can run. Right. So, it was like we didn't give up, but we just had it handed to us in every facet.
I'm going to say this about the bye week, and I think too much has been made about it, but I'm going to make this because, obviously, I think it's a good point. One of the biggest things that a team will do during an off week is self-scout. And you can say that we're going to spend all this extra time preparing for our next opponent, and that gets a lot of media attention. What doesn't get the attention is the self-scouting. And you take a South Carolina, and you have good coaches there with Spurrier and Ellis and their coaching staff. But you take a Coach Spurrier who learned coming out of that Auburn game that, hey, I shouldn't have jerked Garcia out of the game. I shouldn't have put that freshman in. You know, he's talked about that. Late in the game, they didn't go to Lattimore. And so they have the time to sit back and self-scout. And what do? They played Garcia the whole game. I don't think it would have taken a lot for Garcia to come out of that game. You know, even when he threw the ball away there at the start of the third quarter, you could tell it looked like Spurrier was about to have an aneurysm, but you could almost tell also that he took a deep breath. He said, "I'm sticking with my guy and take the good with the bad." And then, you know, late in the game, third and fourth quarter, they kept going to Garcia and they kept running the ball with Lattimore. And it's like they learned their lesson and they used that week to self-scout and they came out a better team for it. And, you know, hopefully that's the last I talk about the off week, but I think we need an opportunity to self-scout. Hopefully on this week we'll be able to work in some of that self-scouting because that's a lesson that we need to take away from this game. My takeaway, I'm going to flip the gears a little bit. I know we've had certainly a negative tone and not without good reason, but I'm going to turn the page a little bit. That game's done, and we need to look ahead. And I think this team still has a lot ahead of us, and I think we have a tough road to hoe now with a loss, but I think the future is still ahead of us. Going into yesterday's game, there were 17 undefeated, and I haven't reconciled back, but there's, you know, 14 or 15 undefeated teams. You know, I don't really care about the undefeated teams in the SEC, and there's two in the West. I hope that they win every game, and, you know, somebody's going to lose their matchup, but I hope they win every game, and
Till they play us,
obviously, because we can take care of the SEC. We can still win the West, and the higher ranked they are, then the more of a buoyant factor that has to us. We need some of these, and to be honest with you, I'm not worried about Boise State or TCU. I think a one-loss SEC team, especially one with a pedigree that we have, can overcome and overstep those. What we need are some of the name brand teams that are undefeated. And there's an Oregon and Ohio State and Nebraska and Oklahoma, and some of these teams will play each other, but there's quite a number of teams from reputable conferences that are still undefeated. We need these teams to start picking each other off so that we can elevate ourselves. Like I said, the future's still ahead of us. We can still win the SEC West. We can still win the SEC. And if that plays out, then we can still compete for the national title. So I think that we're going to come back a better team. And McElroy had his little Tebow speech with the media. I think we're going to come out a better team for this. It's unfortunate that we had to learn this lesson from a loss. Like you said, I wish we had learned it in the Arkansas game, but I think we've learned it well now, and we're going to come out and, I think, play well for it.
Well, I will say I hope that as well. I will say that in looking at our schedule, I think this is the most balanced team in all facets. Senior-laden team, quarterback,
yep,
who can run and throw, running back, wide receivers with size. We don't face anybody else the rest of the year. If we look at the LSUs and the Auburns and all right. the opponents, none of them have all of the pieces. And, yep. and our young defense got exposed.
Yep.
And you're right. I hope they learn from it.
We'll get better, and then we'll play teams that aren't as multiple and aren't as diverse as South Carolina. Tom, we do this every week. Who do you give your mini game ball to?
I have thought long and hard about this, every different position, and went back and looked at the tape and – you know, you just can't give a game ball. You can't give the coaches a game ball. You can't give the special teams a game ball because they got a partial score, you know, with the missed field goal and the missed extra point. And, yeah, Marquise Mays had one great punt return. Offensive line gave up 3 or 4 sacks, even if McElroy did 2 or 3 on his own. You know, not to run down this whole list, but nobody stands out to me that really just busted their ass and did all their assignments. And,
right.
And did everything they were supposed to do.
Well, that's fair. That's a fair set.
I guess I'm sorry to interrupt you a second. I will say that you could give, you know, our game's been a mini game ball.
Sure.
And so could you give Julio 8 catches, 120 yards? Yeah, he had a great stat game.
Sure.
McElroy was 27 of 34. You know, he had over 300 yards. But those are easy. If I really try to find in the spirit of what we're doing, sure. I can't find anybody.
Well, and that's fair. I am gonna award a game ball, and I'm gonna give mine to Preston Dial. He's a repeat winner in my book. He made a couple of big catches, converted for us a couple of third downs, and he just, and again, it's easier when you're in person, but on the TV screen and when they would flash to him, he just seemed to have a resolve on his face. He's a senior. He just seemed that he was trying to inject some of his leadership and some of his passion to the younger guys and making big plays and unfortunately it didn't pan out, but I looked at Preston Dial on the broadcast, and he was someone that in the spirit of what we're trying to do here, I was impressed with the way he played.
Well, and he did have 5 catches. I mean, that was a big number for him.
Yep.
And you know, that's the biggest thing I think that this team is missing is, where are the vocal leaders? Where are the guys that are going to get in your face and jump your crap because you're not getting your job done? And I don't see that in the game. I don't see somebody going and getting in somebody else's face, and it's just they just seem very lackadaisical yesterday.
Well, I hope we find out this week who they are, because the senior leaders and the other leaders on the team, they've got their agenda carved out for them this week and subsequent weeks with what we saw on the field. Tom, this completely flipped the switch, turned the page, and look at our next week's opponent, homecoming with Ole Miss. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think this Ole Miss team is still finding themselves. You know, they bring in Mazzoli and all the controversy of that at the beginning of the year. You know, so they lose to Jacksonville State, but he's only been their quarterback for 2 or 3 days at that point. You know, Kentucky showed me a lot against Auburn last night, and with the way they played in the second half, and you know, they hung 42 on Kentucky going into their bye. And so I think they're pretty healthy. And, you know, Mazzoli's had 5 games now. And he does give them the threat to run. He does have an arm. You know, he looked pretty good at Oregon last year. So I guess it depends on his supporting cast and how they continue to evolve. But, you know, this is a game that we can't look past because they are an SEC opponent. But hopefully we'll be able to work on some things this week.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Mazzoli is going to be probably a good test for us in that he's a running quarterback, and in the second half of the season we're going to face what appear to be some pretty good running quarterbacks, so that's going to be a good test for us. If your best barometer, though, is Kentucky, and Kentucky's up and down against probably a better lucky than good Auburn team. Kentucky showed me nothing against Florida, and we seem to do well against Florida. So when you start looking at common opponents, it's really the best we have at this point of the season. But I don't know. I don't see Ole Miss being that much of a challenge, but we can't look past them, and we need to come in with some hunger and ferocity, and I'm pretty sure that we will. I see it being a long day of us running the ball. I think we're going to see. Yes, I think we're going to come in, and it's going to look like a Gene Stallings game plan, or it had better look like that, where we just pound the ball and try to
yards of rushing.
try to beat them into submission, impose our will, the one, you know, our best against your best. I think potentially, especially on defense, we're going to see some new faces and new places. I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Maybe Jarrell Harris.
Let's see how we shuffle the deck. That should be interesting to see. But I think we come out, I think we look strong, we give a strong performance. I see a 44-14 type ball game. I think we come out, we establish ourselves, and we take care of business.
I agree with the establishing the run. I mean, Coach Saban's going to fill Michael Wayne's ears every day this week. His ears are going to be burning, and he's going to forget his little his trip back memory lane of being, you know, the offensive coordinator for Fresno State, because we're Alabama, and that's not what we're about, and that's not what we do. And so we better see a few 10-minute drives. And so 44, I don't think we score that many points. I think we're going to have some growing pains. I do think we're going to have our way with them, but I see probably 31-13 kind of ball game.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to tune in next week to see how that those score predictions turn out, and if the Alabama Crimson Tide can right the ship. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
Keep fumbling, and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.